China is a bit different because some Chinese vessels have been allowed to pass the Strait of Hormuz with Iran's permission. And also China also has a more diversified energy mix, including domestic coal, renewables, and oil and gas. For the short time, I can say that no physical shortages China will face, but in the longer term, they will face a problem.
Zeynep Malakouti, you're speaking to us from Shanghai. You're at the National University of Singapore. I wanted to ask you about the UNESCO heritage sites. UNESCO has said it's deeply concerned about the fate of Iran's 29 World Heritage Sites after Tehran's palace, often compared to Versailles, a historic mosque, and a 17th century palace in Isfahan, were damaged by Israeli and U.S. strikes last month. Last week, the head of Iran's National Commission for UNESCO warned the extent of the damage to Iran's historic and cultural sites is far higher.
As of last night, I was told that 132 of our cultural heritage sites had come under attack.
Zeynep Malakouti, if you can talk about this, you have been following. What are UNESCO World Heritage Sites? What is the extent of the damage as you understand it? And what are we losing as a world community?
Yeah, as you probably know, more than 100 cultural sites are destroyed or damaged during these 30 days of war by the U.S. and Israeli attacks. These are, most of them are under the UNESCO protect, but not all. These are all damaged or even completely destroyed in Isfahan, Shiraz, and Tehran. Some said that these are collateral damage of the attacks, but if you look at the amount of the damages, you can see that these are not collateral damage. These are just a destroy of the cultural heritage. And the important thing is that people are getting angry more and more every day, and because they can see the real face of war, the destruction of cultural heritage. And now I can say that the people decide to rally around the flag and support Iran.
Mohammed, back into the conversation. Mohammed, the Trump administration keeps saying that they are determined not to allow Iran to acquire nuclear weapons, but the world forgets that it was Trump himself in his first term that pulled the United States out of the international agreement that was limiting nuclear enrichment in Iran. I'm wondering, you're familiar with the Iranian-European negotiations. Could you talk about that?
You know that Trump lied about JCPOA. He said that this is Obama deal. It was not Obama deal. It was a deal endorsed by the UN Security Council. It was a deal negotiated more than 2 years by five permanent members of United UN Security Council. It was a deal discussed in lots of institutes all around the world. So Trump lied about JCPOA, and what he said about enrichment of the enrichment facilities in Iran and the Iranian intention to have nuclear weapon, it is not true because all the Iranian program was under the IAEA monitoring. So Donald Trump, it is a question for the Iranians. What is the main objectives of Donald Trump to have war in terms of diplomatic war, economic war, and now operations against the Iranian people? And as I told you, the Iranians think that, you know, I'm telling you that in Iran, before the war, there was a debate if the United States is going to start this war or not. And some said that it is not rational for the United States to start this war of choice. So right now, people are thinking about the real objectives behind Trump actions against Iran. And it seems that the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself is under a real, real influence by the Israelis, naming Bibi Netanyahu. And I don't want to mention Epstein Files, but ordinary people in Iran, they are thinking maybe there are something in Epstein Files that Trump is accepting every order by Bibi Netanyahu.
Mohammed Islami, I want to thank you for being with us, research fellow at the University of Tehran, speaking to us from Iran, and Zainab Malakouti, senior fellow at the Global Peace Institute, speaking to us from Shanghai. We'll link to your piece for Responsible Statecraft, headlined Hormuz is not a tool to end the war, but how Iran wins the aftermath. We're having this discussion as Donald Trump has just tweeted, a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will, the president said. Up next, a $1.5 trillion U.S. military budget. We'll look at where the money will be going and where it won't. We'll also speak with Juan Gonzalez about a historic gathering at the CUNY Graduate Center here in New York this week, called Latinx Freedom. Stay with us.
Well, I just want to go to work, get back home, be something. I just want to fall in line, do my time, be something. I just want to prove my worth on the planet Earth and be something. I just want to fall in love, ruin it and feel something. Well, lately I don't understand what I am, treated as a fool, not quite a woman or a man.
Palante, performed by Hooray for the Riff Raff at Democracy Now!'s 30th anniversary at Riverside Church. To see the whole 2.5-hour event, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Juan, you're going to be here in New York Thursday and Friday for a historic gathering called Latinx Freedom, Power and Protest in the 1960s. It'll be at the CUNY Graduate Center. You'll be giving a keynote address on Thursday. Can you tell us more about the gathering? Who'll be there, and a preview of what you're going to talk about?
Yeah, Amy. Well, this amazing conference has been organized by two historians, Professor Johanna Fernandez of Baruch College and Professor Felipe Hinojosa of Baylor University in Texas. And it's bringing together, I think, for the first time, veterans of the Latinx freedom and revolutionary movements of the 1960s to be in conversation with academics, university students, and the general public. And it's actually the prelude to a series of events that are going to occur this year, sort of an alternative view of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, that will feature exhibitions in cities across the country, in Houston, Texas, Chicago, Washington, D.C., L.A., and New York, bring to a new generation that this story of how the Latinx freedom movement developed. And they're going to be among the people that are going to be speaking there. There's Carlos Montes, one of the original leaders of the Brown Berets in California. Rosie Castro, one of the leaders of the L.A. blowouts of 1968. Martha Cotera, the famous feminist and leader of the House Unida Party from Texas from that time. Omar Lopez and Tony Baez, both of them leaders of the Chicago Young Lords back in the 1960s. Eliseo Medina will be there, one of the original organizers of the United Farm Workers, and then a major U.S. Labor leader, Digna Sanchez of the former Puerto Rican Socialist Party. My own two comrades from the New York Young Lords Day, Denise Oliver and David Perez, will be there and speaking as well. Linda Coronado, one of the leaders of CASA, the great Marxist Chicano organization in Chicago and L.A. and around the country. And there'll also be some of the top historians of the Latino community, David Montejano, the great historian from Texas, Sonia Lee, Lauren Thomas, Lydia Fernandez, and I'll also be participating in a town hall meeting on Friday night with the great journalist Maria Hinojosa and others to talk about the shadow of ICE, what it means for the Latino community and America. So, and it's going to be a terrific two-day conference. And those people who are interested in attending, they need to register. It's free, but you've got to register at LatinxFreedom.com, and I hope to see a lot of people there at the event Thursday and Friday.
I can't wait, Juan. Again, Thursday and Friday at the CUNY Grad Center here in Manhattan. That town hall meeting that you're having on Friday called In the Shadow of ICE with Maria Hinojosa. I also hope you'll join us on Thursday night for the premiere of the theatrical opening of Steal the Story, Please, about the 30 years of Democracy Now! And in it, as we did at the 30th anniversary, there's a wonderful section, one on your background as one of the founders of the Young Lords here in New York. And that's going to happen at the IFC Thursday evening, the IFC Center at West 4th and 6th Avenue. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, $1.5 trillion budget. Stay with us. Healers by the late, great Randy Weston, performing the song when he spoke to Democracy Now! In 2012. I'll never forget sitting next to him at his piano. Monday, April 6th, marks what would have been Randy Weston's 100th birthday. To see his performance in our interview, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The White House has unveiled a record-shattering Pentagon budget request of $1.5 trillion for the next fiscal year. It's by far the largest year-over-year increase in a presidential military spending request since World War II. It includes funding for F-35 stealth fighter jets, new warships, including Virginia-class submarines, and Trump's Golden Dome missile defense shield, which the White House says will cost $185 billion to boost U.S. shipbuilding, raise salaries for troops, and AI development in the military. This is President Trump at a White House event last week ahead of the budget proposal announcement.
It's not possible for us to take care of daycare. Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things, they can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We have to guard the country.
Critics have slammed Trump's budget proposal for continuing to funnel taxpayer money to increase U.S. military spending for Israel's wars on Gaza, Iran, and Lebanon. Last month, Senator Bernie Sanders filed three joint resolutions of disapproval in an attempt to block the sale of U.S. bombs worth over $660 million to Israel. This is Senator Sanders speaking with MS Now host Chris Hayes.
The bottom line is that to give another 20,000 bombs to a country which committed genocide in Gaza happens to be, among many other things, forget the moral issue, happens to be in violation of American law. You don't sell arms, according to American law, to countries that violate international law and human rights. Clearly, Israel has done that. Israel talked Netanyahu, who for 40 years has wanted a war with Iran, finally got a president to go along with him.
For more, we go to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by two people. We start with Josh Paul, veteran State Department official who resigned in 2023 under the Biden administration to protest the push to increase arms sales to Israel for its war on Gaza. He's now a director at A New Policy, the lobbying group he co-founded with fellow resignee Tariq Abbas to press for a change in U.S. policy on Palestine and Israel. Josh, thanks for joining us again. The Trump administration first declared an emergency soon after the U.S. and Israel launched joint strikes on Iran to bypass Congress on more than 20,000 bombs to Israel. You resigned over the push to increase arms sales during Israel's war on Gaza. Can you give your perspective on the significance of over 20,000 more bombs potentially being delivered to Israel and overall on this shattering $1.5 trillion military budget?
Yes, thank you, Amy. So let's start with that $1.5 trillion budget, which doesn't include, let's be clear, funding for the current Iran war. That will come in a further supplemental. So it's a vast amount of money and ultimately leveraged against the U.S. debt. We are spending our children's money to take the lives of other people's children. That's what it boils down to. It's just a vast amount of money in a way that is reckless by an administration that is corrupt. When we look at this new weapon sales, these new weapon sales to Israel, 20,000, 1,000-pound bombs coming out of, let's be clear as well, U.S. stocks. A lot of these weapons are not going to be built afresh. They're going to be transferred out of the U.S. stocks. And then President Trump will, if he gets it, spend this money from the taxpayer and from our national debt to recuperate or to recoup ourselves for that. It is another burden, certainly on the American people, but also on the world. At the end of the day, it is not just these bombs. There are also other weapons we have provided to Israel, including bulldozers that are being used to destroy Palestinian homes in acts of collective punishment. Senator Sanders will be bringing a vote next week to the floor of the Senate against the bombs, against these bulldozers. And I think it is vital that we see as many Democratic senators as possible vote to block those weapons, and ideally Republicans as well, because this is no one's interest whatsoever.
And Josh, you said that the Foreign Military Financing, or FMF, serves almost as a gift card for Israel to spend on weapons. You talk about the disproportion in military aid specifically to Israel that the United States has had historically compared to other countries in the world.
So Israel has always been by far the largest recipient of U.S. military grant assistance. In President Trump's budget request, the provision to Israel of U.S. funding comprises 63% of the global available total. People keep asking, why do we keep getting pulled back into wars in the Middle East? What about this rebalance to Asia? Well, when you're spending the majority of your global funding in Israel and in the region, in the Middle East, of course you're going to keep getting pulled back. We are not getting pulled back to the Middle East. We are anchored to it as a function of our own funding to Israel.
I want to bring... Oh, go ahead, Juan.
Yeah, I just want to say last month, the State Department approved potential arms sales to three Middle East countries worth more than $23 billion. Talk about this aid to countries like the UAE, Kuwait, and Jordan.
So this isn't aid, this is sales, but the Trump administration used an emergency authority. These cases were already sitting under congressional review, and Congress had questions, both about the arms sales to Israel and about the arms sales to the UAE. The UAE, of course, being involved right now or supporting the genocide that is occurring in Sudan. The administration, I think, very cynically used the current war with Iran to essentially say, OK, we're declaring an emergency. We're not going to answer any more questions from Congress about these human rights abuses, about these risks, and we are just going to move these forward. So a very cynical, very disturbing use of the existing authorities.
And before we go to Rob Weissman, I wanted to ask you, four astronauts are part of the NASA Artemis II crew, became the furthest humans from Earth in all of history, officially, as they began their trajectory, which they just finished around the dark side of the moon. Trump's budget plans to cut 23% of NASA's budget, $3.6 billion cut to the agency's science unit, which could cancel 40 programs. Can you talk about all of these budget cuts across federal agencies and how it's a path for further privatization of the federal government?
Yeah, so first of all, I think we can all think of four other people that we would rather be the furthest they could be from the Earth. So what Trump is doing is essentially creating an opportunity for SpaceX in particular and for other major companies that have close relationships with the White House to essentially privatize space, to continue to advance, you know, through the defense budget, President Trump's, as he sees it, national security role, and to militarize space, but then to cut the civilian side of the funding in order to allow profit-seeking companies, the private sector, essentially to build up its role there as well. So it's a lose-lose both for science and for humanity.
So a moral obscenity, that's what Public Citizen and nearly 300 other groups nationwide are calling the budget. They're urging Congress to reject Trump's budget proposal, which could cut billions of dollars in social programs for education, healthcare, climate, and affordable housing. The White House budget request also continues to aggressively slash federal programs Trump has decried as quote unquote woke, aimed at diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. For more, we're also going to Robert Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen, his group just releasing a statement titled Trump's Budget Proposal is a Moral Obscenity. Rob, thanks again for joining us. Lay out what is not being funded, what is being cut.
Yeah, well, I think we got to look at these two things simultaneously. A $500 billion increase, a 50% increase in the Pentagon budget, and a roughly $100 billion proposed cut for everything else. So the everything else that's going to be cut includes some of the items you were talking about, includes funding for education, includes funding for healthcare, huge investments in science, biomedical science, all kinds of sciences, including the NASA program you were talking about. And of course, cuts for programs to help the poor and vulnerable, because that's what Trump and Russ vote prioritize. Those cuts are not likely to go through. The Congress is not going to agree to them. However, in some degree, to some extent, they reflect what Trump is actually doing in refusing to spend money that Congress has appropriated. On the other side is a $500 billion proposed increase for the Pentagon, and Congress is going to take that seriously. So $500 billion, it's beyond the wildest dreams of the military-industrial complex. All it means is buying more weapons for more war. But if you stop and think about what could we do with $500 billion, if we had the political will, which Trump says he has, for war spending, if we had the political will for peace spending, what could we do? Well, we could restore all of the cuts to Medicaid and food assistance in Trump's prior bill. We could expand Medicare to cover dental, health, and vision. We could have universal care for children 0 to 4. We could double the budget for the EPA. We could invest in affordable housing and end homelessness in the United States. We could restore and expand all of the foreign assistance that's been cut, which public health experts say will lead to the deaths of millions by 2030. We could invest all of that and more. Not one of those things, all of those things and more with this $500 billion. So it is a moral obscenity, both for what it proposes to spend and for what it shows we could do but are refusing to do because we don't have the political will.
And Rob Weissman, in terms of what it proposes to spend, it's an astounding amount of money. What in addition to the fact that Trump has been pushing the NATO countries to increase their military spending, which will, of course, rebound back to American arms manufacturers, and the need of the Gulf states to increase their military spending because of the war that he embarked on here with Iran. What does the President Trump propose to spend this increase on?
Well, the details matter, but I have to say, I don't think they really know. This amount is so large, they're just throwing a giant number out there. We saw in the last tax and budget reconciliation bill, $150 billion extra going to the Pentagon. And the Pentagon made a desperate effort to try to spend as much as it could in September because they were running out of time, according to their own timetable. And they were just throwing it everywhere they could. I think two things that are worth teasing out that they're looking to do. One is the president's Golden Dome project, which is a kind of a revitalization of what used to be known as Star Wars, an alleged AI-driven system to provide protection against ballistic missile attacks in the United States, which is impossible to achieve, according to scientists, but which is projected out to spending over many years at trillions of dollars, and then a massive new increase of investment in the nuclear program to invest in more nuclear weapons rather than just decommissioning the ones that we have on hand.
And if you could talk about the White House calling on Congress to approve a significant portion of its proposed military spending increase using the filibuster-proof reconciliation process, which would allow Republicans to approve the budget without any Democratic support, Rob. Explain in lay terms what's going on here.
Yeah, so it can sound tricky, but it's pretty straightforward. They're proposing this preposterous increase of $500 billion. By the way, on top of a trillion-dollar budget that should be cut, because it's already vastly more than we need to spend. And this is an agency, the Pentagon, that can't pass an audit, that is the center of waste and fraud in the federal government. It should easily be cut by $200 billion. But they're proposing a $500 billion increase. That's a lot. Democrats aren't going to agree to that. So their proposal is the majority of that should be funded through this special process that you're referencing, the reconciliation process, that cannot be filibustered and could be driven through just by a majority of Republicans in the or by a totality of Republicans in the Senate. So it's a way to get around the normal appropriations process, which requires some bipartisan agreement. It would mean that if they do $350 billion without the filibuster, the rest of the budget is kind of a trick. So if you think you're passing just a $1.1 trillion Pentagon budget, you're actually passing a $1.5 trillion Pentagon budget because they plan to do the rest of it without Democratic agreement. And just to make it even worse, to add on to the point that Josh made, this does not include the additional $200 billion they're going to seek to fund and expand the Iran war. So this is separate from the Iran war funding. If you add that in, the Pentagon budget would be up at $1.7 trillion.
We just have about 20 seconds left. What is Public Citizen calling for now?
Well, absolutely no. Not another dollar for the war, not an extra dollar for the Pentagon. We want cuts, but right now the priority is to stop this from going through. And we think that is achievable as you juxtapose these numbers, what the tweets you were reading from the cartoon villain president threatening to destroy civilizations. He doesn't need a penny more to engage in the lunatic behavior he's trying to inflict on the rest of the world.
Rob Weissman, I want to thank you for being with us, co-president of Public Citizen. The recent statements headlined, Trump's budget proposal is a moral obscenity. And I want to thank Josh Paul, veteran State Department official who resigned in 2023 under the Biden administration to protest the push to increase arms sales to Israel amidst its assault on Gaza, and now slamming the military budget that's being proposed. Happy birthday, Matthew Ealy. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking tonight at the Green Music Center at Sonoma State University in California. That's at 7:30 tonight at Weill Hall. Juan will be speaking on Thursday and Friday here in New York City at the CUNY Grad Center at the Latinx Freedom Conference. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for our development associate position. Go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Ducks Unlimited Canada works with landowners and other conservation-minded partners to improve outcomes for communities and wildlife. Supporting vital ecosystems which contribute to water quality and quantity, soil health, support agriculture and economy, mitigate severe weather events, and provide opportunities for recreational access to nature. Together, we are unlimited. Learn more about programs and partnerships at ducks.ca.